Hello and welcome once again to At the Table with Gail Hall. I'm Peter Fleming and I'm just presenting the programme on her behalf. And it's a little bit different today, Gail. We've decided that we're going to put a menu out, aren't we, to people?
That's right. Yes, we are. Well, it was your idea that we're going to do a three-course meal today. So that means a soup, a main course, and then we'll have a couple of desserts for you to think about. So with everything, you know, sort of getting a little bit chillier now, and I've actually had two or three fires, to be quite honest, in my fireplace, of course. And basically, I just thought, well, it's getting to be soup time. And once upon a time, we did a soup a week. So I'm going to start that off again, Peter.
That's a good idea because a lot of people sort of don't. I think they miss soups out, and you can use up all your old bits and pieces, well, within reason.
Well, you can, believe me, and I've done that in the past. But I've decided today to go with roasted pumpkin, carrot, and lentil soup. So it's really hearty and it's a beautiful colour. So we've got one brown onion cut into thin wedges. Two garlic cloves thickly sliced. That surprised me, actually, when they said that, thickly sliced, because it's usually, crushed or thinly sliced. But they're saying thickly sliced. Four carrots halved lengthways, roughly chopped. Eight baby carrots trimmed, halved if large. But I think you can buy the baby carrots, and they've got that lovely little bit of tuft of green on the end of them, and there's a reason for that. And plus extra if you've got to serve. But I think the eight baby carrots in my way is the ones that you put on top of your plate. But anyway, we'll carry on. 300 grams of pumpkin seeded, peeled and cut into chunks. 2 tablespoons of olive oil. 1 teaspoon of ground turmeric. 1 cup of dried red lentils. 1.5 litre of vegetable stock. And 8 sprigs of thyme plus extra. And 1.5 teaspoons of finely grated ginger. And of course, to end it all, we'll have yogurt, Greek style, chopped natural almonds, and of course, crusty bread, which always does go with soup. Now, what we're going to do with the method is preheat the oven to 200 degrees Celsius, put the onion, garlic, carrots, and pumpkin on a large oven tray, add the oil and turmeric, and then season and toss well to coat. Now you're roasting this for 25 minutes or until the vegetables are tender and lightly browned. Now set aside those baby carrots that we talked about and keep the little, you know, the little green piece on the end of the carrot and leave that on a plate and cover with foil and just to keep warm. Transfer the remaining roast vegetables to a large heavy-based saucepan. Add lentils, stock, thyme and ginger. Cover with a lid and bring to a simmer over medium heat. Remove lid and cook uncovered for 30 minutes or until the lentils are tender. Now, it doesn't say, which surprised me, and I read it again, Peter, it didn't say to put it through the processor.
And I've just been reading ahead of you there, and I was thinking the same thing.
Yeah, so basically, I'm going to say this is a chunky soup. You could put it through the processor if you want to, but it didn't actually say, and I don't know whether they've actually left it out, but I did read it twice to make sure that I hadn't missed that, and no, so it's going to be a sort of chunky soup, and then what you're doing with it, once you've laid it out, you're going to top with a little dollop of Greek yogurt and lay a couple of those baby carrots across the plate, sprinkle with the almonds and a few thyme sprigs. And it does look lovely. And give it another little seasoning and serve with crusty bread. And I must admit, it does look rather nice. And I'm just going to show Peter this, but it looks lovely. See those lovely baby carrots, Peter?
Oh, yeah, they're very effective, aren't they?
It's quite effective. If you just put one or two across the...
A nice presentation.
It is, actually. Mm. And I thought, that is nice. But I see from the photograph that it's quite smooth.
I was just about to wave, waving frantically at you.
We're thinking on the same. We've got the same wave, going in our minds.
It's been judged.
Yeah, it has been judged, but it doesn't say to do that. But I looked at it and I thought, gee, that looks like it has been through the processor. But look, you don't have to put it through the processor.
So it's got to taste the same. But
exactly.
I must tell you, I'm a big fan of putting it through and judging it with one of these stick blenders.
Yeah, that's right.
I think soup's much nicer like that.
I love the stick blenders. Oh, that means you don't have to transfer it out of the pot, you know. You can just get your stick blender and go around like in about a minute or two, you've got this beautiful, smooth soup. Yeah, you're not transferring it to anything else.
Very satisfying. Can I just add one other thing here?
Yes.
Just to point out, the stock, I'm a huge fan of making your own stock.
Good on you.
If you buy a ready-cooked chicken from the supermarket, which is, we don't do very often, but it's jolly good value for a meal. I mean, my wife and I can always get three meals out of it,
right,
a chicken for about $14.
Right.
Always put the carcass into a pan, and you can put the bay leaf or something in, a bit somber, but just simmer it down with some or boil it down with it, strain it, and you get that stock.
Beautiful.
Do the same if you're doing shrimps with all the shrimp heads and bodies. Once you've take them all
to
off.
Get your fish stock.
Get your fish stock.
Oh, right.
And for things like it, it's very satisifying then to use that.
Well, that's very good, Peter, because I do the same. Not so much what I do with the chicken, but if I'm doing something with celery or leeks or I even throw clean carrot peels into a stock. I mean, don't waste anything because, you know, it's all a good stock for the base of a soup. And I've done that before.
I was talking to a chap once, they were opening a very upmarket restaurant back in the UK, and he said about the chef that they'd found, he said, well, he said, this fellow is really good. He said, I was most impressed with him because he has a stock pot, which just sits ticking over 24 hours a day, and he throws stuff in it, and I wasn't quite sure about that. I don't know how long you leave your stock pot simmering for, but it seems as if it was just there permanently, and whether there's something suitable to throw in, and then you use that as your stock.
Oh, well, it wouldn't go off. And I mean, of course, you strain it too as well, and then you'd probably take out, you know, something that's been there a bit long. But, I mean, I do it fresh. You know, I can just throw it in and bring it to the boil and I just, you know, use it. And honestly, sometimes if you do, you know, get out your little whiz, stick whiz, and you've got other stuff in it, it can turn into a soup anyway.
Yeah. It all avoids waste, doesn't it?
Yeah, it certainly does. So that's our, we'll call it our soup of the week, because we're going to sort of look at that from now on.
Because it's the only one. Oh, sorry.
So we're going to move on now, listeners, to the main course, which is tuna mornay pie with potato mash. Now, I'm giving you the recipe for the potato mash. I could have easily left it out because, you know, you can just put mashed potatoes. But I thought, no, this is what it's a full recipe for, because you mightn't get the balance right when you're sort of mashing it with milk and potato, you know, milk and butter and stuff. So we start off with this, with 50 grams of butter, one onion sliced thinly, two garlic cloves crushed, quarter of a cup of plain flour, 2 cups of milk warmed, 150 grams of baby spinach leaves, and a 415 gram can of tuna in oil drained and flaked, 2 tablespoons of chopped dill, 2 teaspoons of finely grated lemon rind, and 2 tablespoons of lemon juice. And sort of with the dill, it's good to have a few extra sprigs to serve, because it's all about appearance as well. And the potato mash is 750 grams of potatoes chopped coarsely, 2 tablespoons of milk, 30 grams of butter, and 1/3 cup of finely grated Parmesan cheese. Preheat the oven to 200 degrees Celsius. Grease a shallow 2-litre oven-proof dish. Now, I'm going to give you the method of the potato mash, and I know that you do really know about potato mash, but you boil, steam, or microwave the potato until tender, and then you drain. Now, you mash in a large bowl with milk, butter, etc., etc., and then stir in the Parmesan. But Peter's just shown me a photograph of what he calls a ricer. Now, honestly, I've never seen one of these, never. And apparently you put your cooked potato in that. Quite a bit of pressure goes on the lid, and it obviously comes out like rice, because that's what's called a ricer. And your potatoes come out like that and are beautifully and smooth. Is that correct, Peter?
Yeah, it's like a giant garlic press, isn't it?
Right,
and it's
yes.
got quite long handles on it that you have to get your fists round and squeeze. So you put the boiled potato in and then it squeezes it through these fairly small, about millimetre diameter holes, and it all comes out wriggly out the bottom.
Amazing.
It's just so perfectly. Then you just throw a bit of butter in and stir it up. Yeah. It's beautiful. No lumps.
Absolutely. Wow. Well, I've never seen one. I've just got to say that now that I've actually seen what it looks like, my eyes will be peeled, you know, at any of these shops that I'm going into.
The good cook shop in Paraparam.
Oh, they sell them.
Back End of Farmers, I think we bought it.
Oh, I know what you mean. Okay. I'll have to investigate that, but there you are. If you haven't got a ricer, look out for one, and if you haven't used brute strength with a measure. So we're going to move on now to actually make the pie. Melt butter in a medium saucepan over medium-high heat. Cook onion and garlic, stirring for 5 minutes or until the onion softens. Add flour. Cook, stirring until mixture bubbles and thickens. Now, I think this is the same thing as our usual milk sauce one, gradually stir in the milk. So if you know our little magic, you could use that for that particular part of the recipe. Cook, stirring until mixture boils and thickens. Remove from heat. Stir in the spinach, tuna, dill, rind and juice and season. Spoon the tuna into a dish, top with the mash, and sprinkle over the parmesan, and bake for 20 minutes or until the top is golden. Now, if for any reason it doesn't sort of go golden in the oven, which I think it should, you can actually place it under a grill to finish off, you know, just very briefly, and then top with the extra dill. And I've got a photo of that too as well, and it does look lovely. And the dill just sprinkled over it just gives us that finish.
Oh, yeah. Well, it looks nice, doesn't it? I like that sort of golden-y sort of
and a little bit of dill on the top looks really lovely. Mm. And I know that when I do salmon paninis, and you put it the cream cheese and then you put your bit of salmon on the top, and then you just put a string of dill across it, looks $1 million. Very good. So that's our soup and our main. So
that's great. I like the main. I like things that you can cook with a tin of tuna, because this is yet another recipe that you've come up with where really you could stand open your pantry doors and say, well, I'll cook this tonight. I don't need to go and fetch anything.
Exactly. And sometimes that's what I look for too, Peter. When I look at recipes, I sort of think, oh, yes, well, you know, people have this in their pantry.
A lot of your recipes are like that. I think that's really good. That is, so people have got no excuse then not to cook them.
No, that's
and
right.
Tuna's good. It's cheap and it's very good for you.
Very tasty. Yeah.
Right. Well, this is bringing us to the midpoint of the programme. So I've suggested to Gail, I've seized upon, well, you might find, if you try and find songs about tuna fish, not a lot of songs have been written,
no,
much
exactly.
to my surprise. And I checked Beyonce and Elvis Presley and Cliff Richard, and none of them had come up with it, Spice Girls. Nobody had any fishy songs, but I did find one. I forget the name of the fellow, but here it is. It's quite a jolly little tune. So no dancing this week.
Oh, no dancing. I was very surprised at this when you found this. I thought, by crikey.
Yeah, well, anyway, look, I brought a little rocking chair in for you today, and me, and we'll just sit and rock to these sort of thing that you'd... And
okay, well, you can rock if you like, Peter.
Right. Here we go.
I remember the day it started. Yes, I was still quite young. Drying ham on rye and pizza pie. And my sister had a bonnet for my tongue. Well, I tried all kinds of different foods and every kind of bread. But when I discovered tuna fish, you know, I looked right at my mama and I said, I love it, I love it, so give me some more. I can't get enough of that albacore. I ain't asking for no fancy dish. Ooh. I said, believe me, I've tried food's filleted and fried, but I'm more satisfied with my tuna fish. There was this time I had tuna for lunch. It was 30 days in a row of tuna on whole wheat and tuna on toast. You might say you had a tuna fish show. Well, the waiter in the restaurant, he said, son, soon you're gonna grow fins. And I said, hey, mister, you better hold your tongue until my tuna fish really begins. Because I love it, so give me some more. I can't get enough of that alcohol. Asking for no fancy dish. Ooh. I said, believe me, I've tried foods filleted and fried, but I'm more satisfied with my tuna fish. Now, I met this honey the other night, and she took me up to her pad. She asked me if I was hungry, and she gave me some tuna salad. The best diet ever had. When we started to loving, woo, well, I knew that sooner or later she'd say, sweetheart, what would you like to get into? I said, the baby, your refrigerator. Because I love it, so give me some more. I can't get enough of that alcohol. Ain't asking for no fancy dish. I said, believe me, I've tried foods filleted and fried, but I'm more satisfied with tuna.
Well, they are, Gail. I say it's very difficult to find a song about tuna fish.
And Peter's still rocking. I'm not. this recipe here that the date and apple bake, which I've got a piece in front of me. Woo, aren't I lucky? And that Peter made, and I actually made it too as well, but sorry, my brother and his wife ate most of it and I didn't have any left to bring. So I'm really excited about tasting Peter's, and it looks really good. But I think we ran out of time last week, Peter, and we didn't get round to doing this, and I'm sure we're not repeating ourselves, but it's a lovely, easy recipe. Don't you agree, Peter?
Absolutely. I was very surprised, yeah. Mm,
yeah, very good. So it's basically, in a large bowl, combine 3 medium-sized peeled and very thinly sliced apples. Now, I've got to just stop there because I found in a op shop while I was away a few weeks ago, one of those, you know, slider things that you can...
Oh, the mandolin.
Mandolin, oh, that's it. And I stood there for about 15 minutes deciding whether I should buy it. It was only $5, but I thought to myself, it's just another piece of stuff in the kitchen. So I thought, no, I'm going to buy it. Well, aren't I pleased? I used it to, you know, when I made this, I used it with the apples. So absolutely fabulous, nice and thin. And also, going along with that is 1 cup of roughly chopped pitted dates, 1/2 cup of desiccated coconut, the zest of an orange, plus 1 tablespoon of juice, 1/2 cup of brown sugar, 25 grams of melted butter, and a lightly beaten egg. Now that's it. Then all you're doing is mixing through 3/4 cup of self-raising flour, bake in a lined 20-centimetre square pan, so just not a big pan because you know you want the sort of depth in this, and you're baking it at 190 degrees Celsius for about 35 minutes. It's just beautiful. And all you do is mixing this with a big spoon, basically.
It's an absolute doddle.
It is. It's absolutely, and I know this is going to taste good because, well, I thought mine tasted okay, but it's going to be great because it's the same recipe, and you can serve that. We can make a caramel sauce if you want to. I haven't got the recipe for that, but of course there's the good old cream that goes with it. So very, very nice. It's a lovely recipe, and it's a good, I think it's actually a good standby. It's one of those recipes that you can just pull out and think, look, This is going to take me about 5 or 6 minutes to put together.
Well, I almost did it on the spur of a moment yesterday because we've got my son and daughter-in-law coming round. But my wife does a bit of cooking for the hospice now and again, for the helpers and some of the day visitors, the day patients. And she seized on this one and said, "Oh, I'm going to have that one." She said, "That's perfect because it's innocuous and because a lot of people can't eat different sorts of food."
That's right, yeah.
And so now the mandolin, that was one of the few things my wife brought to our marriage. She didn't have an awful lot of stuff, but she did have a mandolin, which I wasn't quite sure about. And so what is it, 30, 40 years ago, I don't know.
Oh, my goodness.
And we did, but it got thrown away. I never used it. And when I was making this yesterday, I thought, wish we got that blooming mandolin.
Well, I've used it for carrots because, you know, do carrot strips. My granddaughters don't eat cooked carrots, but they eat raw. So I wanged it through that because it's got three different features on it. And I was thinking, well, I've got my $5 worth out of this thing already.
So, I've got to look round op shops myself now.
Right, we're going to move on, Peter, because feed jowers are just falling off the trees, I do believe. I won't count mine. I mean, I did count them, but it's about 12, so they won't be falling off for a while. But this, you know, with feed jars being so prolific at the moment, I just thought this recipe has to come on. So we've got for the topping 8 to 10 feed jars peeled and sliced, a half a cup of brown sugar, 50 grams of butter melted. Okay, so that's your topping for the cake. We're looking at 125 grams of butter softened, a half a cup of caster sugar, 2 eggs, 1.5 cups of flour, 2 teaspoons of baking powder, 1 pinch of salt. We have to add that. I know it's only a pinch. 1/4 cup of milk, 1/4 cup of apple juice. And I'm just going to let you know, if you haven't got apple juice, this is just a little hint, just make that up with the milk. But if you've got apple juice, that's obviously going to help with the flavour. 1/2 cup of plain yogurt, 1 teaspoon of vanilla extract, and 1/2 cup of extra chopped feed jowar. Now we're going to heat our oven to 180 degrees Celsius. Now the topping, pour the melted butter in the bottom of a baking dish or cake tin. So use a pastry brush to brush butter over the sides of the baking dish. Sprinkle the brown sugar over the melted butter in the base of the baking dish. Now, you can actually line your tin if you want to. I always sort of find that it's safer a little bit. You don't want to go to all the trouble of baking and it doesn't come out of the tin. So I just put it at the bottom, and obviously you're buttering the side, so, you know, you'll be okay. Arrange the slices of feed jowar in the base of the baking dish on top of the brown sugar and butter mixture. Cream the butter and caster sugar, then add the eggs one at a time, beating for 20 to 30 seconds between each addition. In a dry, clean bowl, whisk together the flour, baking powder, and salt. And in a second bowl or jug, whisk together the milk, yogurt, apple juice, and vanilla extract. Add 1/2 of the flour mixture to the cream, butter, and sugar. Combine on low speed, then add 1/2 of the milk mixture, then combine on low speed. And repeat that till it's all together. Stir through the chopped feed jowar. That's the little bit that you've had at the end. Spread the feed jowar cake batter over the feed jowar caramel layer you have created in the base of the baking dish. Smooth that over and level out the cake batter. Bake for 35 minutes or until a skewer comes out clean when inserted into the cake. So not forgetting, you know, that it will be sort of like quite sort of liquidy at the bottom. Remove the cake and leave to cool for 15 to 20 minutes in the cake pan. Run a knife around the edge of the cake tin and flip your feed jowar upside down cake onto a plate. Now, I don't know whether this will help, but I know what I do sometimes. I actually sit a plate on the top and then I just do the flip so that it comes out. So you don't want it to break in half if you're trying any other method.
Oh, no, use a plate. You know.
Yeah, use a plate and do the flip.
Yeah, do the flip.
Yeah. We won't do that here in the studio to show you. Now, I want to enjoy that with ice cream or cream, but please, I'm just going to say to you, please don't use a spring-loaded pan because obviously, with that brown sugar and butter at the bottom, you don't want it leaking through, and it just means that you've got to get out the, you know, to clean the oven, and that's a job in itself. So just use a normal one, and that's why I say use some lined, you know, paper to put at the bottom for that. And that, you know, store it in a airtight container and should last for a few days in the fridge. I always think when there's liquidy, like it's like apple and stuff like that, you really need to be careful about just leaving it in your pantry unless you're going to eat it quick, because of the moisture in the apple will, you know, after a length of time, not being in a chiller or something like that, might just go off.
Now, for Joe's, there were a new thing on me when we arrived here in New Zealand, and it's a bit like Marmite and Vegemite, oh, yes. And you love it or hate it. We're a don't really like them for Joa people.
Oh, right.
So I was a bit taken by this one. But then you're reading it. After all these things are variation on a bit of a theme, aren't they? What if instead of when you're making the date and apple bake that we made before, what instead of if you substituted thinly sliced for Joas instead of apples?
Well, nothing to stop you.
Well, you've got the for Joas.
Yeah, well, I should try it, shouldn't I, actually?
You should.
Yeah, because the apples are raw when they go into that date and apple cake.
Yes.
You've got me thinking now, Peter. But there's another thing, too. You can actually, for this particular, we call it a feijoa cake, but if you've got pears or something like that, or pineapple, you can do a substitution as well. Yeah,
of course
we say
feijoas
because we know that they're plentiful at the moment.
Right, yes, yeah. Otherwise it's just
that's
a basic.
That's a good idea, actually. The 12 on my tree might just about go into that recipe of the date and apple cake.
Well, I think the date and apple cake was easier to make.
Yeah, but I think, you know, just get the feijoas out and
put them
in. I'm going to try that.
Okay. All right, well, I think we've just about used our allocation of time.
Yes, we have. Yes.
I think we've covered everything. That's good. You've got a menu there, all you people out there. So throw away these cardboard boxes full of things from online. Open the pantry door and off you go.
Yes. And they can always find them on the site anyway too, Peter, aren't they?
Exactly. Oh, I should just mention that sitting in front of me is a little plastic pot full of Anzac biscuits that Gail brought in, because obviously the day before Anzac Day. Thank you very much, Gail.
That's right. Freshly made at probably about 7:30 this morning.
I should go and get a cup of coffee.
Thank you.
And we'll see you next week.
You will. Goodbye.
Thank you, Gail. Yeah, bye.
This program was made with assistance from New Zealand On Air for radio broadcast and through the accessmedia.nz website. Thank you, New Zealand On Air.